You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and Iowa will again be the center of much of the nation's focus this fall with elections for U.S. Senator, Governor, and other statewide offices, Congress, and the state legislature. Because the U.S. Senate is evenly divided at 50-50, every single seat matters. Today, my guest is one of the Democratic candidates seeking to replace longtime incumbent Chuck Grassley. He's Michael Franklin. He's a retired U.S. Navy Vice Admiral, and he hails from the western part of the state in Sioux City. The primary election, by the way, is going to be held Tuesday, June 7th. Michael, thank you very much for taking the time to be with me today.
Well, I'm pleased to be here, Robin. Thank you for having me.
I always like to start off by asking why you're running. You're a first time. Well, you've run for office before. You've never held office. What are your reasons for running for the U.S. Senate this year?
Well, there's topical reasons of what really pushed me into it. But frankly, in a more broadly speaking, as life becomes more compressed as you get a little older and the choices in life become more meaningful, if you've got the experience, the education, and a spouse that says yes to these things, then you should apply yourself to the best of your ability. And after January 6th, frankly, having defended our way of life, how we thought about ourselves in the world for 39 years, I see an undercurrent of this nation that needs to be addressed. And I represent, I think, completely something really unique in the political realm as the most senior military officer to ever run for a Senate seat. And I think I address the needs of Iowa and the nation best, and therefore I should do what my calling is.
You know, I'll bet when you were considering this, maybe over the summer and fall, talking to family and friends, the issues you thought you'd be talking about and focusing on were completely different from what they are. I'm going to lead off with an issue of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which, with your background in the Navy, an incredible background of service to our country, I'm anxious to hear your thoughts on this. I guess I would ask it in terms of this. Do you think the Biden administration has handled our country's response to this war so far properly? And there's a lot at stake, as people know. If you go too far, get too aggressive, you could provoke another world war. If you don't do enough, you know, you could perhaps it would lead to Russia taking over a country like Ukraine. How do you feel the president's done so far?
I think he's done an admirable job. There are areas where I would advise him to enhance our activity, but I believe that we've done the coin of the realm is do not have a situation where Putin is in a situation where he wants to use a nuclear weapon. Even a tactical nuclear weapon changes the complexion and the strategic landscape, and we as humanity do not want to do that. Ultimately, there are some additional capabilities that we could proffer the Ukrainians. My involvement in that area of the world, besides jousting with the Soviets at the time for a dozen years and some really intense maritime situations, in the 90s, working loose nukes and cooperative threat reduction and conventional arms reductions east of the Urals. I know that area pretty well, especially through the stands, the Kyrgyzstan to Kazakhstan, et cetera. I think I understand the Russian thought process pretty well, although I didn't think President Putin would authorize this. There's just little geopolitical or any kind of economic thought that would have instigated this, other than just a real craven, empty sense that he needs to control things and reverse the geopolitical landscape for a Russia that is being reduced in every line of effort and metric that you can measure them on, from dental visits to life expectancy. It's a country that's on a decline. And so it's a move of a desperate man, and I think Biden's done a pretty good job to keep it at bay.
One additional measure that the Ukrainians have asked for is a no-fly zone, and so at this point, the Biden administration has refused that. They've refused to resupply planes that were going to go to Ukraine through a third country. I believe that was Poland, if I'm not mistaken. But you kind of hinted at maybe some stronger measures that you might have supported. Are those two that you might have differed a little bit with the administration on?
Well, there are two principally different issues. No-fly zone requires you to have what's called PR, which is personnel recovery, which is helicopters, et cetera, which is nearby basing and refuelers and the like. That is a large lift, and that will necessitate United States versus Russia, and I don't think we want to go there at all. Regarding jets, that's a little bit different. There are some other capabilities, though, that are less demonstrable and I think equally effective what's they're facing. And that is, if we expect this conflict to go on a while, I would start training them on some additional drone capabilities to drive back those forces on the ground and provide additional anti-air warfare missile systems that have a longer reach and more numerous to get after the Russian bombers that are indiscriminately killing people. And we need to remember with Ukraine that for every soldier who dies, we can expect 4 civilians to die downrange. And we're seeing that in places like Bucha. This is not going to go well. There's human rights issues. So there's other things we can do. We can speak to like-minded nations and the Ukrainians on the ground and display which unit commanded by which commander from where in Russia is doing what in what community, and put the onus on the military commander to push back on his leadership regarding the atrocities that they're committing. Additionally, I think it's time to do an armed evacuation of civilians in places like Mariupol. We can do these things today, and I think it is a good statement for us and like-minded countries. This isn't the United States. This is from the Shanghai Cooperative Organizations to the Africa Union, the European Union, and NATO, if some like-minded countries want to get engaged in that, to roll back some of the really bad activity of the Russians and ultimately cut this thing shorter than what I think it's going to be.
Has this invasion fundamentally changed your view of the United States' role in the world? A lot of folks in both parts of the Democratic and Republican parties have called for us to come home and not be engaged overseas. Some even felt, I saw, that we had no business being in Ukraine. Has this changed your view that we should be more engaged or less engaged, or did this pretty much fit in with your worldview of where our country's at right now with the rest of the world?
Well, I can assure the listeners that I would be the last person to unduly hazard their sons and daughters in conflict. I've got 39 years of this involved in a lot of operations in the world. But I do believe that the United States has a leadership role. Now, the leadership role does not have to be a soldier with a gun. It can be diplomatic, and it can be materiel. It can be advisors. It can be trainers. We are the preeminent military, and we certainly pay a lot for our military. Our intelligence capabilities are from cyber warfare to the technical know-how. We need to be the leadership role, and removing us from that, or completely conflicting the sensibilities of the United States, as Donald Trump did when he threw asunder various agreements and did some oddities of liking too close to the North Koreans and denigrating NATO partners and and siding up to Putin. You know, I think John Bolton was absolutely right. There's not a lot of things I agree with him on, but when he said that Putin was ill-prepared to do this because he expected Donald Trump to win the election and he wouldn't have to, I think he's right about that. That's a terrible statement, but that's more true than false.
Do you think what's happened in the Russian invasion along with COVID, and we've seen as a result of both, a lot of materials, products we depend on are made overseas. Is this a good time to at least economically look into trying to reshore things more and create jobs here in our country? Or, I mean, where's the balance between being engaged globally? Our farmers have huge markets, but also starting to bring some things back, strategic materials that we see we needed as a result of COVID and this invasion.
Well, the rush for quarterly profits in America's system and the business world pushes for efficiencies across the board, efficiencies in production, et cetera. And we therefore export capabilities left and right. And I got numerous stories about this, but yes, there's an element of business that can't be all about efficiencies. And profitability, yes, indeed, but not everything needs to go overseas. I will say from an ag perspective, Ukraine not getting the crops in a large swath of that country affects everybody on the globe. And here in Iowa, the cost of putting our crops in from anhydrous and fertilizer perspective, the phosphates, we're going to pay a higher cost. I can't guarantee that the end product here 6 months from now are going to have a corresponding increase in value. So that's an issue that the farmer will certainly take the short end of the stick on. It generally happens every doggone time when you have large market fluctuations like this. We also see some political upheaval where it doesn't belong with the price of gas and stuff like that, blaming it on a political situation when that's completely ill-founded. And I think it highlights more grander that in the United States, one of the issues we've really walked back from is education, a more broad perspective of ourselves and our place in the world, and things like where does this come from and what's the supply chain? And I've lived on four continents. I kind of get it. And I'm appalled at some of the decision making and how short-sighted it is.
Yeah, I would agree. I the country that's watching this very closely right now is China. And as they've had designs perhaps on doing something similar, invading Taiwan. How do we manage that relationship? It's such a delicate balancing act again, with our interests in trade. But also the fact, and I don't think I'm saying anything untrue here, that they've pretty much screwed the United States over on trade with some of their practices they've engaged in.
We have given them a buy for a long time. And regarding Taiwan, I do think one of the issues that is going to change their thought process regarding Taiwan is they're going to view that island as a coiled up porcupine it's going to be really a tough thing to swallow, because the sanctions that we're putting on Russia, China cannot exist with those sanctions. The nation will their economy will completely collapse because so much of their export import process is existential to them. So that's perhaps an unexpected good aspect where they will, I think, keep their powder dry and proceed with inculcating Taiwan from a business perspective, not militarily. And that's, you know, that's for them to work with in the Sino side of things. I think that, I think we all know that from a United States perspective, we need to be that leadership role and get out early on what the nefarious activities and thought process the various nations have. and ensure that we're watching, and we will be transparent in what we do, and we'll make sure, from a regional perspective, we know where the bad actors are operating.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Iowa U.S. Senate candidate Mike Franken, Michael Franken, who's a Democrat. He's from Sioux City, and we've been talking about global issues. He's a retired U.S. Navy vice admiral, very knowledgeable about these issues. We've talked about the Russian invasion of Ukraine. We've talked a little bit about China and just the very precarious state of the world right now. I want to talk about some domestic issues. And here again, for those of us with a little gray hair, this is kind of reminds me of the 70s with the competition with Russia and then inflation on the home front. But it seems a little odd. We've got some decent economic statistics coming out every month, but yet there's it on the ground. It seems like people feel, according to polls, that they don't feel confident about the direction the country's going. As you're out talking to voters, what are the big concerns out there economically? What are you hearing and seeing? And also, I think, Michael, I'll talk a little bit about inflation, particularly gas and food prices, and what you think we need to do to get those under control.
Well, gas prices, as I've been watching, are now headed south, which is a good thing. They spiked. Now, if you look at the supply and the time lag from distillery to supply, certainly in retrospect, the quick rise of the price of gas is some profiteering that's taken place. And if you look at the major oil companies, everyone has had record quarterly profits, astoundingly so, including stock buybacks, which, of course, the officers of those corporations, their wages are based on stock prices in many cases, including their future earnings. So, you know, you got to kind of look at U.S. business perspective and say, are you really... is this really the case, or is this lots of this fabricated? And I asked about I called for via a tweet or something about 6 weeks ago for the administration to really look at the inordinate bump up of prices. And I think we're seeing that. And now sheepishly they're starting to go down. They are too high though, as they exist. And this is an opportunity for the United States, just like we did in the 70s, as you mentioned, Robin, where we took initiatives when that was during the Arab fuel embargoes, as you may recall, OPEC embargoes, that we changed the way we lived in the United States. And it's time to do that now, where we can welcome in new technologies, and away we go. Iowa is in the catbird seat to implement a more resilient and redundant energy grid, which will be hugely job creating, wage increasing, and draw additional businesses to the state of Iowa in concert with improved agricultural opportunities. So regarding food prices, that too is rather ridiculous, because if you look at the price of yogurt and the look at price of milk, well, they don't correspond with that increase in price. Where finished products are going up in price dramatically, whereas what the farmer's getting is not correspondingly that way. So here, once again, I think that, you know, businesses and the federal government ought to make some pronouncements and say, tiss, tiss, everybody, knock it off. But regarding the overall feelings of the nation, yes, I'm surprised that there's not more positivity. And are there recession fears? Yes, but I don't think those are any near term. And I think what's most important internal to the United States is we need to heal ourselves. We are so divided. Congress is so stale in getting things done without huge muscle movements and fits of rage amongst the members, completely alien to what I would view as Iowa values, and not the level of professionalism that I've experienced in 30, 40 years of being a professional. I'm appalled by it. I would like to be the voice of reason and ensure that I got the steel-jawed to the steel-jawed perspective to win these discussions.
Quick follow-up questions on both food and gas prices. Would you support an excess windfall profits tax on oil companies? And then number two, do you support legislation that's currently floating around to strengthen anti-monopoly laws, which particularly in Iowa would concern two key industries, the food industry, but also tech?
Well, you know, we've got antitrust legislation that we've set aside. And there's one person in particular in office in Iowa who's watched this happen, as we all know. Yes, I would. And regarding a windfall tax, we are still providing some significant subsidies to oil companies. It's time to that. And it's way past time that stopped. And yes, windfall taxes across industries, indeed. I mean, the level of wealth disparities, if you saw the list of billionaires that created in America again, I'm not against people getting rich, not at all. But I am rather look askance at the basic wage scale flat. And it has gone up this past year, 3.5%, as I recall. But it's not keeping pace with inflation, and it's not keeping in pace with CEO money earned. And I completely dispel the whole thing about, the CEOs, they sat flat for the last couple of years. That's horse hockey. I don't believe that at all.
As you're aware, the Build Back Better plan failed, lack of support. A couple key Democratic senators didn't support it. Do you support, if you were elected, would you support bringing that back, and what elements would you include in it?
Robin, I would take the Build Back Better plan. I learned something. I was early, the first military person to ever work for Ted Kennedy as a federal executive fellow designated in his office. And he gave me great latitude, but what he also did was his staff taught me how to get things done behind the scenes on Washington, D.C., for the good of both sides of the aisle, working bipartisan efforts. But the key with a plan with like Build Back Better is it's too big of a bill with too many variances in it, too many chapters in it, too much stuff that provides ammo for people to vote against it. I would divide it into segments so that it's more identifiable, more understandable, something better to that you can introduce to your voters and say, I'm for it because of this. And those who vote against these smaller segments, well, frankly, it denudes their position when it says, do you realize you're voting against infrastructure issues in your state? And it provides a great chatter across the table that says, hey, listen, Representative, don't be voting no against this thing just because you're of a different party. Knock it off. Do what's best for the citizens. So I'd break up the Build Back Better plan in smaller segments and get on with it.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned overcoming this partisan divide, which is so deep. Even in the 70s, when you can recall with Watergate, things were divided. In the Iraq War, we were divided, but this is just exponentially bigger right now, it seems. How do you balance, Michael? You got the January 6th Commission, which was one of the motivations for you running, you mentioned. How are we going to balance this if that committee comes out and recommends indicting the former president, President Trump? With also wanting to bring us, our country, try to bring us back together somehow, will that further inflame things? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it will be an inflaming issue. But, there's a basic truism in life that you need to come clean. And ultimately, I think it would be a rough thing to do to indict a former president. But it also provides a catharsis for the country to heal on and to move forward. And what I see in broad circles is the people who are more vocal for Donald Trump and saying the praise of Tucker Carlson, those have become much more subdued, much more quiet, much more introspective, much more holy hell, what's happening here? I think that there's an element where a large segment of the Republican Party who is looking for some different leadership, for some salvation, and for getting out of the yoke of what is hugely unhelpful. A person who has zero issues in common with any Iowan that I know, Donald Trump. I mean, the guy is just, he's beyond the pale. And when he was elected, that was enough that all I needed to do is say, you know what, I'm not working for that guy. I worked for every president since Jimmy Carter. I'm done. And I'll hold to it. And anybody who thought that he was going to be anything other than a demagogue, you know what? You're not going to change that group of people. But ultimately, you need to come clean. And I think the January 6th committee needs to go forward with an honest and true assessment. And what we do with that recommendation afterwards, well, that's something we can talk about later.
Final question. We've got about a minute here. I just want to allow you the chance to make your closing statement. What's your competitive advantage over your opponents in this primary and in the general election? And if you would, include your website if folks are interested in learning more about you.
Sure. My website is frankenforiowa.com. And I think you'll see that I have a lot of experience in Washington, D.C. I have born and raised in rural Iowa. The youngest of a family of nine, didn't have a lot of money, but the values surrounding me as I grew up, respect, compassion for others, satisfaction of a hard day's work, those were foundational that led to a lot of success as an adult. I think that's kind of what we want in Iowa, where the public school system, you're all about education and pro-democracy and pro-civil rights and pro-business with a different tax code, pro-clean water, which will address the problems that we have in agriculture. And I really want to be a strong ag culture, but also to be that person to ensure that the quality of life of Iowans gets boosted during my time. And I know how to get things done in Washington. I want to rebuild a sense of progressivism in the state of Iowa and bring people together. We have a very strong financial statement that just came out. And we've got a powerhouse of a team, and I think we'll have more than enough to go through the primary and win the general election going away. And I appreciate everybody's support.
Michael Franken, thank you very much for being our guest today. On Heartland Politics, Michael is a Democratic candidate for the U.S. Senate. He'll have a primary election on Tuesday, June 7th. Michael, thanks again.
My pleasure. Thank you, Robin. Best wishes to you.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.